Join us for Bengal Buzz on KISU-FM the first and third Mondays of each month at 7 p.m. during the academic school year. For more information or audio of this episode or others, visit KISU on the web at kisu.org.
Program support for KISU's Bengal Buzz is provided by a grant from ISU Credit Union. With offices in Idaho Falls, Blackfoot, Burley, and Pocatello, ISU Credit Union provides a full line of services for financial solutions, including home, auto and RV loans, and credit cards, plus over 5,000 shared branches nationwide and much more. Bengal Buzz, supported by ISU Credit Union. You've never seen banking like this.
Welcome to Bengal Buzz tonight. My name's Ryan Sargent, your host, and I'm very excited to have a guest that has been a friend of mine for a long time and a mentor. I've wanted to have him on the show for quite a while, and we finally snagged him. Dr. Kent Tingey, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate the opportunity.
So, Kent, you've been at ISU for a little while, and you announced your retirement a few months ago. You retire at the end of the year, but what I'm not sure very many people know is that you're actually an Idaho State alumnus.
I am. I received my doctorate here. In fact, we moved here 30 years ago. I took a job here 30 years ago, and one of the reasons I came here is because it provided me the opportunity also to get my doctorate. And so I did announce my retirement. We'll be leaving at the end of the year, but we will have been here 30 years. It's been great. Plus, I am a graduate of here as well.
Yeah, very cool. And you've got several children I know that have graduated, and a son that will graduate this next month, right?
Our last of six children. Our son will graduate here in December, and our children-in-law have graduated here. So, yeah, we've had the long string of Bengals. Yeah,
pretty strong Bengal family.
Yeah.
But let's learn a little bit about you, Kent. Where are you from originally?
So I'm from Logan, Utah, originally, and went to school in Logan, went to high school in Logan, at Skyview High School, just outside of Logan, actually. And then I went down and played football. I went on a football scholarship to Brigham Young University, went there.
What'd you play at BYU?
I played receiver at BYU. And played there 4 years, and then I stayed as a graduate assistant while I was working on my master's degree, and so I helped coach for a year. And then when I graduated in communications, we took our first job in Hawaii. I took a job in public relations at BYU Hawaii campus. And we were there for 3 years. And then we took a job at Dixie College in St. George, Utah.
Uh-huh.
And we were there for 3 years. And then I took a job in Washington, D.C. for a United States Congressman, Wayne Owens, from Utah, from Salt Lake, and was there, I think, for 3 years. And then we came here.
Very cool.
So
very cool.
That's been our story.
And you came here, I think, if I remember right, 1989?
Yeah, 1989. I came here as the director of university and government relations.
Okay. And what's that job?
So the job now, we call it marketing and communications. And so I was over all of our marketing and communications and then our government, our lobbying as well.
Uh-huh.
And so during the legislative session, I'd spend a couple of days a week in Boise. And it was good. So I spent a lot of time at that job, and it was a great experience.
So what made you want to go back to higher ed? You started in higher ed at BYU Hawaii and Dixie, but then went back to Washington, D.C. to work for Congressman Owens. And what drew you back to higher ed?
Probably the most compelling things were probably twofold. Number one, I really wanted to get my doctorate. Mm-hmm. And I had always wanted to get that, but I wanted to go out and work for a bit. And number two, we wanted to get back out west. And we were in Washington, D.C., and it was interesting. I was working for Wayne Owens at the time, who was in the House. And I also kind of wanted to be on the Senate side as well. And so there came a point in time where I had an opportunity to either stay with Wayne Owens or go to work on the Senate side for a senator also from Utah, Orrin Hatch.
Uh-huh.
And so I really thought
you were going to switch teams from,
yeah,
from a Democrat to a Republican,
yeah,
and
so,
everything. Huh?
So that was kind of the issue. One was a Democrat, one was a Republican. They were really close to each other. They were really close friends. And so that made me a little bit nervous. And so about that time, the exact same time, my brother-in-law sent us a job announcement in the Salt Lake Tribune, and it was the job here
University
Relations. I forgot we call it marketing communications. That was University Relations, And so I got that, and I thought, well, gee, if we took that, we'd be able to move back out west, which we wanted to at some point, not necessarily that soon. But I could also, so I looked at Idaho State University, and I saw that they had a doctoral program in political science. And so I thought, that'll give me a chance to do that. So we applied for the job, and we got it. And it's turned out to be a great, great opportunity and blessing for us.
Yeah, yeah. So what were your first thoughts? Well, I asked this to a lot of our guests, your first thoughts coming into Pocatello. Had you spent time, I mean, you grew up an hour down the road, but had you ever spent any time in Pocatello prior to?
No, I had not. The only time, I'd been in Pocatello a couple of times. I'd played football games against Highland High School, or I think it was Pocatello High School, in the Mini Dome. Uh-huh. In Holt Arena, and that's all I knew of Pocatello. That's nothing about Pocatello, even though we were just 100 miles down the road. And came here and lived up in, our family stayed in Washington, D.C. for a while after that, and so I lived up in student housing for a bit. And I thought it was wonderful. My in-laws live in Logan, and so they came up with me the first time. He had gone to school here for just 1 year. He was from Grace, I think, near Grace. Okay. And so he'd come up here to play football, and then he went in the Army and served in the Army for several years, and then he went back to Utah State. And so they drove up here with me and kind of showed me where he had lived and some of the experiences he had had. He'd also been a basketball coach at Preston High School, and so he'd coached a lot of games with Preston here in Pocatello, at Pocatello High School. And so I thought it was neat. It was really cool. I loved the campus immediately. It's a beautiful campus, always has been, mm-hmm. and has only gotten more beautiful over time with the things that we've done for beautification. But yeah, it was great right from the start.
Yeah. It's got to be a big change from Washington, D.C. to Pocatello, Idaho.
It was a big change. In fact, I remember in the interview process, and I've thought this from that first time on, I was sitting at the table in an interview in the conference room, and somebody said, well, why would you want to move to Pocatello, Idaho from Washington, D.C.? And when we lived in Washington, D.C., we lived out in a community called Sterling Park out by Herndon. So it was about the distance.
That on the Virginia side?
In Virginia, okay. Out by Dulles Airport. And it was about the distance of here from Blackfoot away from work. But it took me 2 hours in every day and 2 hours out every day.
Oh, jeez.
And we had to stay... We had to stay till 7 o'clock at night because that was at 5 o'clock in the district. Uh-huh. And so I got home late and would go early. And so I said to them, who wouldn't want to move to Pocatello, Idaho from Washington, D.C.? And I felt that, you know, I've heard in interviews, various interviews over the years, well, why would you want to move here? Mm-hmm. And I've always thought, who wouldn't want to move here? It's such a great place to live.
Yeah.
And a lot of places are great, but you just can't beat Pocatello as a place to live.
So the commute was your least favorite thing about working on the Hill. What was your favorite thing about working on the Hill?
My favorite thing by far was the fact that when you're in Washington, D.C., you are basically in the capital of the world, and you have the pulse of the whole world going on, and everything going on internationally and nationally, you're right there, and you get to see it firsthand. And fun things I got to see. I got to go to a couple of space shuttle launches down in Cape Canaveral.
Oh, wow.
Because of some committee assignments and things like that. Got to go to a presidential inauguration. And so when you're in Washington, D.C., it's just kind of the pulse of everything in the world, and it's kind of fascinating and really fun. So we really enjoyed that.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. So you arrive in Pocatello in 1989 and get to work. Tell us a little bit about how things have changed and what was then university relations to today.
University relations, marketing communications has changed massively. When I came here, everything was, in terms of news, was the newspaper and television stations. And when we came here, Pocatello, for example, was the smallest market in the nation that had all three network affiliates, NBC, CBS, and ABC.
Really?
Uh-huh. And that's even changed now, too, but it was the smallest market that had that. And so all of your news basically was done through newspaper, both weekly and daily newspapers, and television and radio. And so I spent a lot of time going to newspapers and going to television stations, and I'd go around the state to these weeklies and talk about the university. Well, that's totally changed now. And the news staffs in those days, both reporters and television, would come out and do stories, And then we put together some plans. We'd put together video news releases. But now it's gone online and it's gone social media and the staff's in the news. And now we're much smaller. The newspaper's much smaller. When I came, they had two reporters whose beat was Idaho State University.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Two dedicated just exclusively to the university.
And now that's kind of gone away. And so that's probably the biggest change I've seen in marketing and communications or university relations we had there.
Uh-huh. And so when you first got here with that job, you also handled all government relations.
I did.
Is that right?
Okay. I did. So I did our state legislative work and some of our federal. We weren't doing a lot of federal now. We came to do much more. But so that's what I handled.
Yeah.
But it's a whole different ballgame.
I was going to say, did we have any employee in Boise that was kind of at the legislature full time?
That was me.
You? Mm-hmm. Would you move to Boise during the session?
Or? I would go up there for a couple days a week. So I'd go up there usually on like Wednesday and Thursday or half a day Wednesday and Thursday and then come home because there wasn't much going on Friday. So that's what I did during the legislative session. And that, because I'd been in Washington, D.C. and had built lots of relationships politically and had done all of the, for Congressman Owens, had done all of his political action committee fundraising as well, I kind of learned the legislative process and really enjoyed the legislative process here in Idaho and working with legislators from all parts of the state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you've seen some major changes. Idaho politics in 1989 were significantly different than they are today. I think the state Senate was split exactly or nearly 50-50 between Republicans and Democrats.
It was.
A Democratic governor at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So you've seen some big political shifts in the state as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. And there, you know, in that period of time, there were two Democratic governors, but there has been a big shift. But the legislators are still the same. They're so enjoyable to work with in Idaho. They care about the people. They care about the state. They're willing to talk to you and want to spend time with you. I had a lot of friends who'd say, well, you could go in and see the present pro tem of the Senate or the Speaker of the House or the co-chairs of the Joint Finance and Appropriations Committee. And you can't do that everywhere.
Yeah.
But in Idaho, you can.
Yeah, very unique that we've got a governor that, you know, will show up without visible security at least and really be able to mingle even today.
Yeah.
So, you're listening to Bengal Buzz. Our guest tonight is Dr. Kent Tingey. So, Kent, you came here to get your doctorate. Tell us about the DA program in political science here at ISU.
I love that program. And so mine was – I did it in two things, political science and then with a focus on economics. And it was a great program. There were some good faculty members. Dave Adler was here at the time, and he taught a lot of the constitutional stuff, and I really enjoyed that. And Mark Macbeth, who is an outstanding professor, he was going through the program at the same time. And it was a really good program, and it was very enjoyable to me. I only took a couple of classes every semester, usually night classes, and so I had my job full time, and then I was going to school and working on that. But it was really enjoyable. I learned a lot and was able to accomplish that goal that had been so important to me.
Yeah.
But it took me, I think, as I recall, like 6 or 8 years to get it all done.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
then I was able to do my dissertation, which was on leadership, university leadership, presidential leadership. And I enjoyed that a lot. And the faculty were great, very helpful.
Yeah. So tell us about your dissertation. What was your argument?
My argument was that the type of leadership that an institution would need would be different based on the kind of institution it was. And so I went from large public institutions, large high research base, to large private institutions, all the way down to small colleges, to junior colleges. And I spent a month while I was here at Harvard University in a leadership program. Mm-hmm. And there were a couple of faculty members, Bill and Tolman, I think their names were, and they had focused on university leadership and they'd written a book on that. And so I based it around that, and I did a survey of university presidents around the country based on the type of institution and based on the type of leadership that they would provide. And it was really interesting, fascinating.
Yeah.
In fact, I need to get it out and read it again. But basically, what I found was that in institutions like Idaho State University that are large, kind of research-based public institutions, you need there were four frames of leadership, and one of them was political leadership. And I found almost exclusively that the leadership in these kinds of institutions were kind of political leaders. Whereas in large private institutions, it was more, I'm trying to think what the frame was called at the time, but it was less political and more visionary.
Uh-huh, okay.
And then down at smaller institutions like junior colleges, it was more kind of structural frame of leadership. Uh-huh. But it was fascinating. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. So what was the major difference between your master's program and entering into a doctorate program?
Well, my master's program, it was in communications.
Yeah.
And
so different subject matter altogether.
Yeah. And it had to do with how to communicate and the types of communications that were more effective. And the doctoral was all political. And I've always kind of been a political buff and liked politics. And so it was really interesting to me and fascinating, and especially looking at leadership.
What year did you graduate with your DA?
I think it was, I don't know exactly, I think it was probably about 1996 or 97, somewhere in there.
Okay, great.
And then, it's been too long ago, I don't remember.
And then you were named vice president of university advancement or institutional advancement or whatever it was called in 1999, a couple years later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What had happened is the president of the time, about that time, the president, Dick Bowen at the time, kept saying to me, you really need to move into advancement. And I, for a year or so, I said, I have no interest in that. I have none. I have no interest in asking people for money.
Uh-huh.
I just want to stay in marketing communications or university relations at the time. And he kept asking me, he said, you need to really think about that. And it was interesting, when he hired me, he had come kind of from the same background I had. He'd been a president of another university, but he'd lived in Washington, D.C., yeah. And had worked both on a committee staff and on a senatorial staff. And so he asked, and then at about that time, the university started thinking about its first ever capital campaign, and only at this point. And they hired a consultant, and he too said, we want you to get in the mix of when we decide to have a vice president for advancement, because the university didn't have one.
Oh, really? So you're the founding mm-hmm. vice president of advancement. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And so again I said no, that's really not something that's interesting to me. I like the marketing communications. I do not want to raise money. I did it in Washington, D.C., a little bit differently with political action committees.
Uh-huh.
But and finally they, between Dick Bowen and Jerry Panis, who was the consultant for the campaign, they talked me into throwing my hat in the ring. And so they selected me as the vice president for advancement. We immediately, started preparing for this capital campaign. And so since that time, that's what I've been.
So when we use that term capital campaign, for our listeners, what are we talking about with a capital campaign?
The university had never been into fundraising in a big way. We'd been into annual funding where we'd go out and we'd talk to donors about gifts, and the university had grown. I mean, when I came here, as I recall, there were only about 6,000 students or something like that, and it went up to, I think, a high of nearly 14,000. And so, but the legislature across the nation were starting to fund less and less a percentage of university's budget. So, for example, when I came here, I think the state legislature funded just about 60% of the university's budget from mm-hmm. state appropriations. Now that's down in the 20% range, and in some states it's much lower than that, I think in the 10% or even lower. And so the need to raise money in a more sophisticated and a comprehensive way came up, and so we determined that we needed to have a capital campaign. And so we went through this whole process. We brought in Mr. Panis and we did a feasibility study, and we had to identify for him, I think about 100 individuals or corporations that we felt could make or influence a major gift. Mm-hmm. And so he came in and he interviewed all of these people, and this was brand new, and they do it because the people will tell them the truth. I mean, they'll say, well, we won't do it or we will do it, and they get some insight, and then they give us detail on who we need to work with and about how much we think we could raise. Well, so we started working as a foundation board and about how much do we want to set as a goal of this campaign. And the first thinking was we wanted to set a goal of about $10 million. Mm-hmm. And I remember very vividly that made a lot of people nervous. And
thinking it was too high.
I think it was way too high, because we were raising, you know, $1 or $2 million a year, and we were going to set a goal for 10. About that time, a gentleman by the name of Jim Rogers bought the television station here in town, KPVI. And one day he came in and met with the president and me and said, I want to make a gift of $10,000. And because we like to support the communities where we have television stations. He was Sunbelt, and they had, six or eight television stations in the Intermountain West, Nevada, Montana, and Pocatello. And he came in here and he made that gift, and that just kind of blew us away.
Uh-huh.
And so Jim started getting more and more involved, and it came to the point where the president, myself, and the governor, Kempthorne, flew down to Las Vegas and asked Jim to chair the Capitol campaign. We had been told that we needed to find a chair of the Capitol campaign, and so we went down and asked him to chair the campaign. And he had been involved in Capitol campaigns at the University of Arizona, where he went to law school, and also the University of Southern California. I think he got a master's degree at the University of Southern California. And he said, yes, I'll do it. But he said, you need to set your heights way, way, way higher. Uh-huh. And so I remember we had a meeting in Sun Valley. So the foundation board in those days, the homecoming meeting would be, so we'd meet twice a year, once at homecoming and once in the spring. And those meetings were a half a day long, and in Sun Valley, it was a half a day, and then they'd go ski. And so we started talking about the campaign, and he said, this all needs to change. And so they started talking more and more, and they started talking about what the campaign would be for. And so we determined that it would be for three things. Number one, for what we termed academic enhancement, things that would help teachers teach better and students learn better. Number two, scholarship endowment. And number three, a performing arts center. We had a donor by the name of Thelma Stevens. She and her husband, the L.E., had passed away, and they had wanted to build a performing arts center, and that was a $10 million gift, and that just kind of blew us away at the time.
Yeah.
And so those three things, and so Jim, so we started talking about goals, and somebody said, well, we ought to have a $50 million goal. And I remember at that time, two of our board members walked out of the meeting in Sun Valley and quit the board because they
really?
Said, we
just,
can't do
it's just
that.
Impossible, huh?
And then it got up to 100, and finally Jim said, well, I'll chair it if we have a $150 million goal. And it was beyond our even dreams. And then Jim said, well, 150 sounds too, it doesn't sound right, so let's go 150, 151 or something like that. And so we set that as a goal. And the university started getting involved in fundraising in a real way. It never had. And so Dick Bowen was the president at the time, and he started going out and making visits, and we got a lot of major gifts. We Beverly Beisline, a name that's famous here in Pocatello,
had a huge impact on
the Barbara Marshall, and people like that, and. It just was amazing. It was an amazing thing. And so, anyway, that's what we did through.
Oh, go ahead.
I think it was, as I recall, it was a 5-year campaign. Our centennial was in 2001, so the university turned 100 years old, I think, in 2001. And the campaign went up through, I think, 2002. And we met that goal.
Yeah. Exceeded it, right?
Yeah. 152 and a half. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was. And it was a learning experience because we hadn't done it in a big way. We had a foundation, but...
Foundation was fairly new even then, though. I mean, it's not like it had been around for decades. But.
No, other big names in Pocatello were involved in that. Jerry Olson, some remember. Mm-hmm. Park Price was involved, and Ted Crumley and Mike Mooney. And, you know, it's been a remarkable thing. And then other people got involved, like Joe Jensen and Barbara Marshall and Beverly Beislein. In fact, at one of the Sun Valley meetings, we were having a hard time raising money for the Performing Arts Center. And we had designed this thing. We'd worked with our faculty and with our students and with alumni and friends on what this was going to be. And the vision of what it was going to be is what you see now, this beautiful facility. Well, we got up there ready to go, and we just didn't have the money. Uh-huh. And so they started thinking about, well, let's cut it in half and make it more of an institutional-looking-like building, like more what you see in an academic building on campus. And I vividly remember both Barbara Marshall and Beverly Beislein. So Beverly has a theater in there named after her,
uh-huh.
and Barbara has the Rotunda named after her, and Joe Jensen and Cheryl Jensen have the Grand Concert Hall. And both Barbara and Beverly said, you do that and we're out.
Yeah.
And so the foundation board voted to stay with it, and we kept at it, and now we have what you have.
Yeah, we have a beautiful building on campus.
In my opinion, absolutely. It's one of two icons in this community, that and Holt Arena.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely beautiful and nationally recognized as one of the best performing arts centers in the country.
Yeah.
Just remarkable. So for the last several years, we've been working on an alumni center. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's another thing. So I don't know, something like 18 years ago or roughly, the dream came up about the university needing an alumni and visitor center. And rough plans were made, and the thought was, let's try to raise money for that. And so in kind of a haphazard way, we did raise money for it. And so a lot of people stepped up and made gifts. And I think over the course of, I don't know, a 10-year period of time, maybe 13 years, something like that, uh-huh. we raised about $1.3 million for that, but nowhere near what it would take to build it. And we thought it would be probably an $8 million facility or something like. And we wanted a facility. The alumni house now is old. It was named after Harry Magnuson, who, another one from Coeur d'Alene, was one of the originators of the ISU Foundation and made a gift of the alumni house, the Magnuson House. But we thought we needed something bigger where we could host events, where we could have offices for both alumni and our development, our fundraising operation, and we could bring our friends in, our students, our alumni, our friends, and host them to events and have meetings. So it just went really slowly. And it picked up some steam, I guess, more steam again 3 or 4 years later, or 3 or 4 years ago. I mean, it was on the verge of really dying. Uh-huh. And that was hard because we probably had, I don't know, 100 people or 150 people who had made gifts to it. And the alumni people worked hard, and the development people worked hard, and our alumni board of directors and our foundation board, and we'd always talk about it. But 3 or 4 years ago, we have some really good friends by the name of Wheatley, Jack and Mary Lois Wheatley, and their son. Mary Lois has now passed away, and their son Charles Wheatley.
Uh-huh.
Jack was from the Marsh Valley area. I think the town is called Robin, if that's in the right area.
Yep. And Robin's right by McCammon.
Oh, okay.
Other side of the freeway from McCammon.
Well, Jack came here in the 40s and went for 1 year. And then he took a commission at the United States Military Academy in West Point, and he went and graduated from the United States Military Academy. And then he went to work for the Army Corps of Engineers, and then went to work for, moved to Palo Alto, California, and became a developer. And he developed a lot of things, including many of the buildings in the Stanford Research Institute. He built, several things, and he eventually became mayor of Palo Alto, California, and he was followed, incidentally, as mayor by friends he made there, who's another by a gentleman by the name of David Haight, whose daughter Karen Huntsman, she and John have become major donors,
uh-huh.
and so he was living in Palo Alto, California, and he started many years ago, giving funds for scholarships, and. But they were anonymous. And so the first one were scholarships for students from Marsh Valley High School, anonymously. And so we would pick 3 or 4 every year. And then he kept increasing. He and Mary Lois kept increasing. And pretty soon those scholarships went not just for Marsh Valley students, but for Eastern Idaho students, and then pretty soon they came for all Idaho State University students. And then some years after that, maybe, I want to say 10 years ago, they had been involved in beautification at a few institutions, Stanford University and Brigham Young University, becoming involved in beautification in a big way. And so about 10 years ago, he said, we want to do some beautification. We love trees. And so it started out where they put, I want to say, 100 or 150 trees around Bart's Hill. Uh-huh. And so as you go up now, they're growing. They're 3 or 4 years old now, and or maybe even 5 or 6. And so every year they'd come to our facilities department and say, okay, what are the projects that you think you need for beautification? And they'd pick those, and they'd decide what to do. Well, after that, he said he had co-chaired a committee to build an alumni and visitor center at BYU. And he said, where are you on that? And we said, well, we're kind of spinning our wheels. Well, to make a long story short, I'm being very windy today, but to make a long story short, he said, we want to make this happen. And so they made a very, very significant gift 3 years ago or something like that. And then they made another very significant gift a year ago. And those two gifts by the Wheatleys made this thing really helped us to understand we can get this done. Mm-hmm. And so right now we've started the public phase of the campaign. We're about 95% of the way there. It's going to be about, roughly speaking, an $8.5 million building. And we're about 95% of the way there. And so we're in this campaign now asking people to help us throw it over the top if we can do that by the end of the year. And then we got a matching gift by Beverly Beislein, who has since passed away, but she's matching every gift between now and the end of the year for the Alumni Center. And our plan is to put over the top, to get the documents done, and to start construction this summer. And it'll be down, 2 years from now. And it's gonna be transformational, in my opinion, for Idaho State University again.
Yeah, it'll be a real game changer and a beautiful gateway into campus.
Yeah.
So you can give to that campaign with the match, so your dollar goes twice as far at isu.edu/alumnicenter.
Yeah.
Well, Kent, we're just about out of time. Any last words before we sign off?
No, I guess I would just say this. Idaho State University is an outstanding institution. You know, when we first moved here, people would say Idaho State University, or they'd say Pocatello, Idaho. And, you know, I was in Boise one day at the legislature. Somebody said Pocatello. But lives have been changed, and lives have been won, and lives have succeeded based on students coming here and what they've learned from it. We've got an outstanding faculty and staff, and this university is a life-changing institution. And to me, that has been the most remarkable part of my time here, is to see lives changed and blessed because of this university.
Yeah. Well, thanks for everything that you've done. What a remarkable career here at Idaho State. And you know, you think about what a different institution ISU is, just in size, in academic reputation, and real growth over the time that you've been here and the role that you've played in that. But I think I speak for everyone when I say thank you for everything you've done.
And, well, thank you, Ryan. And
thank you tonight for being on the show.
Well, thank you. And you've made a remarkable difference at this university as well. And what you've done is really significant. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, thanks, Kent.
Okay.
And we'll catch you next time on Bengal Buzz.
Support for Bengal Buzz is made possible through funding from ISU Credit Union. ISU Credit Union is providing financial solutions to members from their offices in Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Blackfoot, and Burley. Services include mobile and online banking, mortgage loans, auto loans, and more. Modern financial support provided for you in a caring, member-friendly environment. Bengal Buzz, supported by ISU Credit Union. You've never seen banking like this.